Okay, we're going to begin on with Ois Tzadi Hei, number 95. We will repeat the question, okay? We will repeat the question that the Kuzari king asked the sage. A classic question. After your whole glorious description of everything that Hashem did for the Jewish people, and of all the great things that they experienced at Har Sinai, they must have been the most despicable of people to be able to, right there, at Har Sinai, follow up with the eagle. After everything they saw, Mitzrayim, the splitting of the sea, culminated with the grand spectacle of Hashem coming down on Har Sinai and revealing Himself to them, they went ahead and they made a golden calf and they said, hey, that's our God. And the sage said, the golden calf, there was a lot more to the story. It was actually a very subtle sin. But in order to understand this, we are going to back up to properly understand the biological background, if we'll put it that way, of the Jewish people. So we'll begin again from the beginning of Ois Tzadi Hei. Omer Achaver. So the sage answers, Ha'peli Ma'at, bear with me. Atshava Eretz L'chogdulasa. The sin, when we hear that they were accused of sinning, that has to be taken in perspective of how great they were. V'dayli le'eh. He said, and we already see that they were a very great people from the fact that Shashem b'charam la'amu lu'uma mi'beinu esa'ilam, that Hashem chose them from all the nations of the world. Obviously, they were worthy material. Hashem didn't pull them out of a hat. Hashem knew what He was doing. V'chul ha'inyan ha'eloiki ala moinam ad shigiu kulam el mala sadibu. And also, the very fact that they all ascended to the level of prophecy, as we discussed the other week, Hasinai, prophecy is not a technicality. A person has to raise himself to the level to be able to receive prophecy. You saw the description of the Rambam. Basically says that we're talking about a person who reaches the epitome of perfection, of human perfection. Never sins. His thoughts are always on Hashem. Hashem is what fills his consciousness all the time. Such a person can merit prophecy when prophecy was in operation. And therefore, the fact that every last member of the Jewish people experienced Har Sinai means that they were all on that level. Every last Jew was on that level. It's mind-boggling. It's over 20, yeah. Yeah, I don't know about the other ones, but those are the ones we always reckon with. The Abba Indian on the shame of Yomem Nevius. Now, it wasn't just the men, it was the women too. Now, if you want to understand quite how drastic this is, Acha Shleichal Indian Eloiki can be Echidim Ibn Adam Acha Adam Arishim. You have to take into account, and if you think, okay, all 3 million made it to the level of prophecy, that's because it's not that hard. Just note, from the time of Adam Arishain until the time of Har Sinai, there were a handful of people who received prophecy. So, all of the 600,000 who were at Har Sinai, the 600,000 people in one shot who reached a level that all throughout the rest of history, a handful of people reached. So we understand that we're talking about a nation that is not head and shoulders above the rest, but is way up on a different plane. And now, he explains the background. This is what we started last week. We'll see. Ki Adam HaYashalim Mibilti Tznai. Adam HaRishon was the epitome of the perfection of man. Adam HaRishon embodied everything that man could ever be. Why? What's that? Before the sin. Even after, in a way. Even after. You know what? For our purposes, I'll say after. Now, what's that? Before, certainly. But the truth is that before is actually a level that we can't even relate to. Before, other Marishans didn't look like we do. Other Marishans' body was of a different nature. Afterwards, he became a person. Yet, even then, he was the epitome of what a human being could ever become. As I'll explain now. Keitana b'shleimus ha'maaseh. Hashem created Adam because he envisioned something, right? Hashem envisioned what he wanted man to look like. He envisioned what he wanted man to be. Obviously, Hashem envisioned the optimal man, right? Now, if Hashem is trying to make something, it's not like us, we try something and it doesn't work. If Hashem tries something, it works. So if he was envisioning the ultimate man, and that's what he created, the man created directly by Hashem had to be the ultimate man. So, Me'oise Chacham was created by the all-wise creator, Yachol, the all-capable creator. You have to realize also that he wasn't limited in his resources. It's not like he was stuck with certain materials. Hashem was devising the materials that would serve the purpose most optimally. Okay, etc. There was no other factors involved. Atmosphere, nurture, nothing else played a factor. Adam HaRishon was created directly by Hashem to a state of full maturity, which means that this was the fittest person from every possible perspective. Physically, spiritually, emotionally, he was the most perfectly developed man that ever existed. Because Hashem created him directly. It had to be the most perfect thing. Any imperfections later are from the fact that once it already depends on the natural process, it depends on the atmosphere, it depends on the mother, it depends on the father. There's all kinds of factors that can contribute negatively. And now, V'asher kibel ha-nefesh al-tuma va-seichel al-tachlis ma-shem b'yicholis ha-enoshi. He received also the soul and intellect of the ultimate man, meaning his intellect was fully developed. He wasn't born, it was like we said before, he was born in his prime. He was created in his prime. Let's say 30 years old. I don't know what it was. Let's say 30 years old. He also had a mature intellect of a 30-year-old who had already been thinking, who had already been working hard to reach, to maximize what his intellect was. Adam was a completed product. Meaning, all the thought and study that we have to do to develop understanding, Adam was born with. He was born with fully developed understanding, fully developed philosophy, etc. And he had even more than just intellectual, he was more than intellectually developed. He was actually connected to that next godly level that's beyond intellect. Okay, let's see what he's referring to. Right, Soloima. What he means to say is, Hamalo asher b'yidbak b'elikim uvaruchni. He already had achieved the level through which he can connect to Hashem. He was already at that level that we described before of being a candidate for prophecy. He was naturally there. And his consciousness was up there among the malachim. The Yoda Hamita is nibli limud. He understood all the depths, all the truths of the world without having ever studied it. Aval b'machshava kala. He just had to think about it a little bit. Meaning, have a philosopher who worked for years to develop understandings. Right? If he wants to refer to a certain subject, he just has to invoke it in his mind, right? That's all the Marishan had to do. He was already at the post stage. Ukvar nikra etzleinu ben elikim. And therefore we find him referred to as Ben Elikim, a godly being. Ben Elikim in this sense doesn't mean a son of God. It means, like they say, we say B'nei Chutzlaretz, right? We're all B'nei Chutzlaretz. We were. Right? What does that mean? It doesn't mean children of Chutzlaretz. It means people of Chutzlaretz, right? There also, Ben Elikim means a person of God. Oh, what this means, we're going to elaborate shortly. Well, Kol Adomim Lo Mizarim Mi B'nei Elikim. Also, all of his progeny who were like him were also referred to as B'nai Elikim, godly people. So we already began discussing last week how essentially man is a divine being. I think this is how we ended off last week. Man essentially is a divine being. The body is the bottommost layer of man. Man is his neshama. The neshama connects to the greatest of places. Now, it's a little more than that, because actually, what is the neshama? You know what the neshama is? You go up, we said it, the Jewish neshama continues up all the way high. You go a little higher, where do you reach? Like the Jack and the Beanstalk, right? You climb up high. What's that? Well, there's a lot of levels, and it's beyond the scope of this year, or if I'll put it more honestly, it's beyond my understanding to really delineate those levels. But the point is that it connects higher and higher and higher and higher. And our job basically in this world is to access as high a place as we can. The more we work, the more mitzvahs we do, the more we dedicate ourselves to Hashem, the higher up the connection is reaching. Okay. But what's at the top? The top, of course, is Hashem. It's the Shechina. So the truth is that this is not necessarily an inherent part of every man. Human beings are not necessarily that. Not every human being has that. That's why we say, Shalaya sonu kigoya arotzois, v'samonu kimishmachois ha'adama. A Jew and a Goy have identical exteriors. Right? But actually, did I say the word wrong?
No.
Said it right? Oh. So, look the same on the outside. But actually, all you're seeing is a very superficial comparison, likeness. Because the Jew, they're mishpechos ha'adam. They were formed from earth. They're earthly beings. It's a clod of earth that right now was pulled up a little bit. And right now it takes the form of 200 pounds of earth, which is elevated 6 feet above earth. But ultimately, it's simply going to collapse back down there. Right now, the earth is basically refigured for right now. Okay. Or, well, the truth is, we grant them more credit than they grant themselves. They call themselves, they call us too, they call human beings the most intelligent of beasts. Okay. So no one can come and say that Jews disparage non-Jews because we hold them on a higher level. We say that man is an essentially different category than beast. But at the end of the day, it's an earthling. It's an earthling. We look the same, but actually what we are is the other way around. We're not coming up from earth. What you're seeing here is the bottom of a yo-yo. We'll call it that way. There's really something coming up from coming down from the highest of places, and the bottom is the body that you see here. So what you see by a guy is something coming up from the earth. What you see by a Jew is something that's actually just suspended down from the highest of places. Two essentially different things. Now, what is it that makes that difference? So, using the terms we were using before, it's the neshama. But really it's more than that. Or what is the neshama? Really it's more than that. Hashem, the Shechina, hovers over this world. That's one of the first psukim in Bereishis says, "V'ruach Elokim merachefes al pnei hamayim." Right? That's right at the beginning, when the nothingness of earth is described, right away you have the spirit of Hashem hovering over the waters. What was the spirit of Hashem waiting for? A landing pad. Doesn't say in the later psukim. Doesn't say what happened with the spirit of Hashem. What's the spirit? What's the hovering going on? The answer is yes. It was waiting for a resting place. It's meant, the purpose of the creation was for a man to come and serve as the receptacle, as the landing pad for the Shechina, or if we'll use the other terms, what we've seen recently, the chariot, the Merkava, the vehicle of the Shechina. When a person makes himself worthy, he becomes a vehicle of the Shechina. The Shechina connects to him, the Shechina becomes anchored in the physical world, through who? Through man. Up till then, it's hovering. If it's hovering, it could also depart. But when man successfully connects, it becomes anchored in that man. Now, man is connected to the highest of places. This is what we mean when we say that Adam HaRishon had that extra connection. He had the fully developed intellect. That puts him at the level of an Aristotle. That's pretty great. To be created an Aristotle is pretty great. But then he said, but he had the next step, the Ma'ala Elokis, the godly element. And that's this connection that we're talking about here. He was connected to the Shekhinah. He was a vehicle. Okay. Now, here we have to understand that this is the big challenge of man. This was the big challenge of man then, and it's a big challenge today too, although now it's already a little bit more set in stone. In those times, the challenge was to hold on to that. Because whereas intellect is an inherent part of who man is, this element is not. Adam HaRishon was created with that connection. He was created with that connection. But it's not an inevitable part of his existence. It could depart. And that depends on man himself. And therefore, at the end of the day, there's a struggle. Man is flesh. Flesh is material, physical, drawn towards the physical. And there's always that certain struggle. There's the Ruach Elokim, the Spirit of Hashem that's hovering. And then there's the flesh of man that's pulling in the other direction, away of this Ruach Elokim. The question is he going to pull hard enough? Who's going to win the tug of war? Is he going to pull hard enough that he disconnects? That the Ruach Elokim, the Spirit of Hashem, is left hovering and ultimately will just float away? Or will he manage to pull in the other direction, away from the physical attraction, and connect better, maintain that connection, enhance that connection? That was the big question. At that time, that was a very big question, which each person had to determine for himself. There was a tug of war. Man was a tug of war. That was the essence of what man was. And the question is, who was going to win? And therefore, that's what the Ramban says, what the pasuk means at the end of Bereishis, when it says that Hashem was already starting to plan the flood. It says, "Le'adainu chi ba'adam lo'elam v'shagam hu basar." A little bit of a cryptic puzzle. Rashi says that I'm not going to continue struggling with man because he's flesh and he's just drawn after the physical. I'm going to bring a marble. But the Ramban says no. Hashem was saying as follows: "Le'adainu chi ba'adam lo'elam." Up till now, my ruach, my spirit, has been connected to me. But man is reaching a situation where they're becoming more and more flesh. The flesh is winning. And therefore, as the flesh becomes stronger and stronger, the connection to the Ruchi, to my spirit, becomes weaker and weaker, until ultimately Hashem says, it's not going to stay in this man anymore. It's just going to float away. So, Adam HaRishon was created with that spirit. Now, each of his descendants was faced with the challenge. Are you going to maintain it, that godly connection? Or are you going to intensify the flesh and just turn into a hunk of flesh and that spirit will simply float away? So, what did happen? He had many sons. And the big challenge of mankind was only met by one of the sons. None of them managed to reach this, to meet this challenge, except for Hevel. Everybody else were drawn after the physical and more away. They pulled themselves more away from that godly connection until it detached and left them. Now they turned into the most intelligent of beasts. Everyone but Hevel. Meanwhile, but they turned into the most intelligent of beasts. They turned into simple earthlings. They lost that connection. It was a new species. It's evolution, just in the reverse order. They developed from godly beings. They developed into good old plain earthly men. Hevel didn't. He retained that connection. Ki hu haya daimel. He was like Adam. And when Cain killed him because he envied him this success, instead, Shais came along and he gained that element, the godly connection. Is that what you were wondering? Does that answer your question? No. Okay. Shais was the one who continued what man really was. Everybody else were drawn after the earth. They lost that connection. Only Shais retained it.
How's that transfer?
What's that?
His transfer, he had a buster.
No, it wasn't a transfer. Shais was also born of Adam. He had the same opportunity that all of Adam's other sons had. Whereas up till now, Hevel was the only one that cashed in on it. Shais now also, now that Hevel was gone, he came and cashed in on it. But it was through his efforts. Had Hevel still been alive, Shais probably would not have been born. Many of the Kadmonim say that Shais was actually a spiritual replacement of Hevel, a Gilgul, if we'll put it that way. So that's what he means when he says that he replaced him. It's not that if Shais would have been born and he would have worked, he would have put in the efforts, he would have had it too. It's not exclusive. It doesn't have to be one person. It was one person because only one person put in the efforts. Oh, so let's see. No, it didn't. The highest gul of a lev. So Shais really was the heart of mankind. Vizulosa keklipa. All the rest were just the shells. Mamish, literally, as we just described before, they're shells of what man is really meant to be. It's just the flesh casing. The essence of man, that godly connection, was already gone. So really, Shais embodied man. He was the human race. The rest were, they turned into hunks of flesh. Yeah. Usgulas Shais Enosh. Out of Shais, also there was Enosh. He managed also to retain this issue. V'cheinigia inyad ad Noach. And this continued until Noach, be'echidim. But only individuals managed to retain that level. Hayu levavois doimim la'adam. And with these people who constituted the heart of mankind, like Adam was. They were Adam's continuation. The rest evolved into human beings. They evolved into regular flesh, blood, and that's all. Nikroim b'nei Elohim. Therefore again, these people were called godly people. Shleimim b'briyasam. And these people at this time also, it manifested physically. They were perfectly formed, or their character traits were perfect, and they lived long. This is interesting. I'll note, by the way, the Kuzari here is siding with the Rambam. We see the fantastic lifespan of the earlier times. Was that classic to all people? Or was it just the people mentioned? Rambam says it was just the people mentioned. Everybody else lived like lifespans like today. Ramban says that doesn't make any sense. That was the general lifespan of people in those days because the atmosphere and the climate before the Mabul was much better. All of Earth, the whole atmosphere was ruined after the Mabul. That's why lifespans started shortening. But here the Kuzari seems to tend towards Rambam's approach. Says that this longevity was specifically by these people who were the heart of humanity. They were very capable. And it's through these people that we count, right, that we maintain the count of Adam to Noach, Noach to Avram, by these people's lives. And now he notes, we're going to expand this concept a little more. Up till now he said that yes, there's this godly element that man has to work to retain. Now this is not as absolute as that. There could be a person who works very hard, gets that godly element very well ingrained in himself, to the extent that it continues on to his children. If they don't work to retain it, it gets weakened but doesn't depart. No, we're progressing a step in our discussion. It's not just as simple as that each person either makes it or doesn't. It could very much depend on what your father managed to do. If your father managed to deeply ingrain it, and then you didn't live up to it, so it weakened. It became a dormant gene. But it didn't necessarily depart. So therefore, you could have a head of a family who worked very hard, all of his kids had it in him. Some of them worked harder, they had it stronger. Others didn't, they had it less, but it was still there. The next generation also didn't, it departed. So therefore, he says, how did it work in the genealogical way? Now, there could have been people who did not really connect to this godly element. Keterach, as was the case with Terach, the father of Avram. On other branches of the family, that godly element was continuing with full strength, right? But this branch of the family, Terach's branch, it started weakening.
Where was it strong?
What's that? The whole lineage from I don't remember the exact lineage, but from Noach to Shem, Nefer, etc.
Rav implied that Terach had a cousin that was strong. But in Terach's generation, there was strong.
It seems that way. There were people who were. There was always the yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever, right? Which was going on. There were people who were retaining the tradition. It's interesting. Avraham Avinu was born in Mesopotamia. He wasn't a part of the yeshiva world. There was a yeshiva world at that time. There were people in Yerushalayim, where Shem lived, who maintained the tradition all along.
But that's his great-great-grandfather. That's not a cousin.
What's that? Yeah, that's true. But Aver, who was his ancestor, was still maintaining a following, a circle of people who were continuing this tradition all throughout. There was the Yeshiva Shem Aver. Terach wasn't a part of that. Right? Avraham Avinu became a disciple of Aver. The Oid. And in addition to that, Shehisig Noach Ba'atzmoy. Avram actually knew Noach. So therefore, yes, Avram Avinu got a dormant gene. But he brought it back to life by going, becoming a disciple of Eva. Even knew Noach. Apparently the Kuzari is understanding that he learned from Noach. And therefore, Avram Avinu reignited. He was bringing it out. He was fanning the gene that he had inside him, just that it was dormant. And yes, there could be such a thing as that godly element manifesting in a grandfather, and then a grandchild or a great-grandchild, even though it didn't manifest in the in-between generations just because it was weakened there. But it was dormant. It was buried underneath in potential.
So, side point, when did this Maisa happen with him learning, with Avraham Avinu learning from...
When did he learn from Shem Ve'Eva? I don't know. It's interesting to note that when he actually settled in Canaan, he did not settle there. Rabbi Victor Miller puts a lot of significance on that point. Seems strange. Avraham Avinu, right? He's a Baal Tshuva from Mesopotamia, right? You have what we're calling the yeshiva world in Yerushalayim. And he comes... settling in Eretz Canaan, where does he go? Down to Be'er Sheva. Why didn't he settle in Yerushalayim? Well, apparently he had good reason, as is indicated in the fact that, at the end of the day, who was chosen as the man of God? The Baal Tshuva from Mesopotamia, right? And not the people from Yerushalayim. They were very, very great people. But it's like you have shining stars. Once the sun appears on the horizon, the stars pale into insignificance. You don't see them anymore. That's what happened with Avraham Avinu. Rabbi Victor Miller says a bold thing. I wouldn't say this on my own authority. I'm saying it on his authority. Everything I say here is on his authority. So, but this is a bold thing. He says Avraham Avinu didn't settle there because his burning idealism would have been looked at funny in that area. They already had the way they did things. They've been doing it for many years. Avraham Avinu was an idealist. He figured it all out. Okay, he had this tutelage also, but he was very much a self-made man. And he was burning with enthusiasm and with passion. And, for example, right? Imagine if he would have been living there in Yerushalayim. How did he respond when the guests came? Right? Avraham Avinu believed in chesed. How did he manifest that chesed? He goes charging out, right? A man, a sick old man, right? You ever see a 100-year-old man running? You picture that scene itself until you can crack up. But man, he's also very sick. He goes running out. How does he invite them into their home? Into his home? He bows down on the ground and he's begging them desperately, please, please come in. Alright, you know, as they say in Hebrew, Yesh Gvul. You know, okay, you know, don't go overboard. That was the thing. Avraham Avinu wanted to live his life overboard. And therefore, he didn't want to be inhibited at all. He moved down to Be'er Sheva. He did his thing. He gained his own following. And ultimately, like we said, it was the sun. Once the sun appeared, that was it. Avraham Avinu became the whole focus of history. But okay, whatever it is, Avraham Hayasgulas Eva v'Talmidu. The Maaseh, the Kuzari is putting significance on the fact that Avraham did learn from Eva. Not sure how that works with everything we just discussed. There was obviously an element of both. There was an element of self-made. There was an element of tutelage from Eva. V'Talmidu. He was his disciple, and he was his choicest disciple. Valken Nikro Ivri. Therefore, Avraham was called an Ivri. A few different takes on this, right? Avraham was called an Ivri. So the Kuzari's pshat is, we're seeing here, he was called Ivri as in the Eberite, the disciple of Eber. The Eber Hayaskula Shem. Eber was the choicest product of Shem. The Shem Hayaskula Snoyach. Shem was the choicest product of Noach, as is evidenced by the fact that how do we see that Shem was the most perfect product of Noach? Yefes wasn't the bad guy either. Ham, alright, that's a different story. We know their stock today too, but Yefes was a pretty decent guy. But we see that Shem was the choicest from the fact that from the fact that his lot, what area was he granted? He was granted Eretz Yisrael. So in Yerushalayim, right? He was the king and the Rosh Hashiva in Yerushalayim. Eretz Yisrael was the most perfectly balanced land, climate wise, etc. Atmas Hanavur, which also indicated the physicality of the land that walked together, was that perfect harmony, the perfect blend of all the rest of the world. Look at Eretz Yisrael today. Where else in the world? Maybe there are other places, I don't know, but that you can travel a few hours and go from snow-capped mountains to deserts. You have everything, right? It brings it all together. That perfect harmony actually symbolized a deeper harmony. That was the place where all spirituality comes together. That was the perfect place, Atmas HaNevuah. It was the land of prophecy. And land of prophecy means that was the land where, once again, we talked about the Shekhinah hovering. The Shekhinah hovered over that land. A person who personally connected to the Shekhinah can enhance that all that much more in this land. The fact that Shem was granted this land, which holds the greatest potential for getting out of this world, for achieving in this world, shows that he was the greatest person. Yefes moved up to the north, Chum moved down to the south. Okay. Now, so this is the background, the family background of the Jewish people, who we are. Usgula Savrami Banav Yitzchak. So again, what is the characteristic of the Jewish people? It's that connection to the godly element. That is what made those people what they are. And that's what makes the Jewish people what we are now. Usgulas Avram Ibanov Yitzchak. The choicest of Avram's sons was Yitzchak. Ve'hirchi kol banov me'al oretz hazoy samisugelos. And therefore, Avram specifically, deliberately distanced all of his other children from this land. He wanted only Yitzchak here, not encumbered by the influences of the others. He wanted it to be the exclusive domain of Yitzchak. Let Yitzchak maximize the properties of this land, and let there be nobody else here to inhibit that. Uskulas Yitzchak Yaakov. The choicest of Yitzchak's product was Yaakov. Esav too was distanced from Eretz Yisrael because it was designated as Yaakov's land. Meaning, even though it took a while until Yaakov had to make a bit of a detour before he actually settled there, but it was cleared away. Esav was moved out of the way. Now, Yaakov will do what he needs to do. Ubnei Yaakov kulam sgula hayu. Now with Yaakov, so again, what's going on here? When we say that Yitzchak was the product of Avraham, and Yaakov was the product of Yitzchak, what that means is the same process we described earlier. Avraham Avinu had that godly connection. When his children were born, Yitzchak brought it out. He intensified it. He fanned it. Yishmael drifted. Yishmael himself, like we discussed, he probably did have godliness about him. But the next generation, since he drifted, it started already becoming weakened in his time. The next generation was even more distant, until it turned into the chevra we see today around us. So, the same thing happened with Yaakov and Esau. Now, I'll note, by the way, something interesting. And apparently, there was an incident. Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner was on a plane that was hijacked. That is the famous story. Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner was on a plane that was captured and taken to Syria. It was a very suspenseful time. When the world famous Gedolei Hador was a hostage. And he was ultimately released. They ultimately worked it out. The plane with all the hostages were free. It was a plane full of hostages. But Yitzchak Kuttner told him a certain incident that happened at the time. The hijackers, when they actually landed the plane in Syria, I think it was Syria or Lebanon, one of those friendly places. When they actually landed the plane there, they were waiting there throughout the whole period of the negotiations. They were showing off their captives. They had all kinds of different dignitaries come for a showing, but they were showing off the captives. So, at one point, a certain very respectable looking Arab came on, some sort of dignitary, I don't know what he was and who he was. He told us, so he didn't know who he was, but he said, the Arab basically, he walked, looked very respectable, dignified. He walked about looking at the different hostages. When he saw Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, he stopped. He began asking him some questions. He engaged him in conversation. They had a little bit of an exchange back and forth. And it was a high level exchange. And that was that. Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner commented afterwards, he said, this fellow, he said, at the end of the day, Yishmael are the offspring of Avraham Avinu. Somewhere deep down there, they have Avraham Avinu's genes in them. Just most of them did a very good job of completely concealing it. But he said, this fellow actually manifested those genes. You saw it in this fellow. And you could see that he was an offspring of Avraham Avinu. Okay, so you see that there's something about it. But whatever it is, to get back to our subject, certainly, at the end of the day, the only ones who really manifested the godly element was Yitzchak from Avram, Yaakov from Yitzchak. Then, Yaakov already had a greater success. Bnei Yaakov kulam sgula hayu. Yaakov's children, all of them, were at the level, managed to retain that level. Kulam ru'uin le'inin eloiki. They were all candidates for this godly level. Therefore, they all together merited the land of Eretz Canaan. So this was already a breakthrough in the history of people. Yaakov Avinu was referred to as the Bechir HaAvots, the choicest of the Avots. Again, how are we going to go comparing Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? But we do see something outstanding. Yaakov Avinu managed to raise a family where every last one of the 12, right before that, Avraham and Yitzchak was one out of, wasn't just one out of 12. Avraham Avinu had many other children. One out of a whole bunch. Yitzchak, well, one out of 2, maybe he had more also. Yaakov, every one of the 12 made it.
So what do we attribute it to?
What's that?
He had good chinuch, his mother's. Why didn't he have a much better success rate than the whole world?
That's a tough question to answer. In other words, you're asking me to explain why Yaakov is the choicest of others as opposed to Avraham and Yitzchak, and I can't answer that question. There's also no question that in certain respects each of the patriarchs had their area where they were the choicest. If I want to get around the question, what I'll say is that, but it's certainly, there's an element of truth to this. I just don't know if it's the answer. It's certainly part of the answer. Is that Yaakov Avinu was manifesting the accumulative effect of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And also, the Imahis were also the accumulative effect of Sarah and Rivka, and then Rachel and Leah.
But on the other hand, Avram gave birth to an Av, Yitzchak gave birth to an Av, and all the none of the offspring of Yaakov Avinu were an Av.
You know what? There's something to that too. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Okay. So now, v'zeh hayatchilas chulo inyan elok yalko. He says, and this really marked a significant stage in history. Now, instead of that godly element being sprinkled and scattered, and skipping a generation here, and then being fanned up again there, all of a sudden now, it became established in a family. This was a breakthrough. Whereas up till now, it was just sprinkled about at different individuals. And here, already, Hashem took measures to preserve what was developing here. Vayishmerem elikim, vayafrem, vayavem, vayadleim b'mitzrayim. Here already Hashem took it into His own hands. Meaning up till here, it was man's job to preserve them, right? But now already Hashem said He's going to take it on Him to develop what we have now, this family that's being so successful, to turn it into a huge nation. That was already Hashem's personal undertaking. And therefore He brought them to Mitzrayim. What was Mitzrayim? We've discussed this. Mitzrayim was an incubator. Mitzrayim was a place where they had a great success. 12 people all maintained that godly level. But we all understand that that's precarious. You want that to continue and continue and continue? No. The different families would start spreading out and branching out, and different families would settle in different places in Canaan. Some would retain it more, some would retain it less. And we have the same phenomenon of sprinkled branches of the children of Yaakov would retain it, others would drift off and be lopped off like Esav and Yishmael were. So therefore Hashem said, at this point, I'm going to breed them. Both into Mitzrayim. In Mitzrayim they couldn't spread around. Mitzrayim was one kingdom in which they stood out. They would always remain distinct, whether they liked it or not. And here Hashem was going to breed them under controlled conditions, turn this into a nation. Kasha yigdala ilan. Asher shol shaytoy. Hashem took these good seeds. And now Hashem personally began cultivating it. And it sprouted, just like a tree that begins with a good root. If you take very good seed and you cultivate it properly, if you're a master agriculturist, that's not the right word, but who can tell us?
Horticulture.
What's that?
Horticulture.
Horticulture. Ah! So if you're a man, if you can, what's the person who grows trees?
Horticulturist.
If you're a master horticulturalist, I got it. If you're a master horticulturalist, you will manage to produce from that seed identical fruits. Avram Yitzchok v'Yaakov v'Yosef v'Echad. Yes, Hashem's agenda was to produce from these great seeds fruits that would be identical. These seeds were who? Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef and his brothers. Hashem wanted to produce a nation of this caliber. V'haya min apri. So who were some of those fruits? Moshe, the Aaron, Umiriam. My Bitzalel v'Aliyah.
But 200 years later.
What's that?
But 200 years later. We didn't.
Oh, here you're seeing the success of Hashem's breeding program. Hashem was cultivating it. And when Hashem finished, these were the fruits. That requires elaboration. We're probably not going to manage that now. But there's more to that. Let's see.
I mean, he didn't say it, but am I right in assuming that throughout world history, it was Bechira alone that individuals made it from the chain from Adam down to we're now up to Yaakov? So now Hashem is tweaking the system somehow.
That's right.
Into one family. It's also at the same time that he's revealing to the world, to the Jew, to the family, that he is Hashem. He didn't reveal himself on such a big scale yet.
Very true. Very true.
So he's...
That's right. That's right. This is all. We have to realize that this process... This, by the way, what we're noting here gives us a little bit of an idea of quite how privileged we are. We have this whole inyan of that godly element handed to us on a silver platter. Right? And it's like you're saying, up till then, this is mamish, a very, very profound point. Up till then, it was, do it yourself. See if you can manage it. How many people managed it? One person every couple of hundred years. Right? And Avraham Avinu showed up. It was a shame. There was an Aver. People were sprinkled throughout history. And that was basically how it was working. See if you can figure it out all by yourself from scratch. Not mamish from scratch, because again, there was that line of tradition from Shem and Aver. But figure it out yourself. I'm not going to help you. Now, what happened was, and here's really the missing piece of the puzzle that you're presenting, Avraham Avinu was so successful. Avraham Avinu deserves a whole shira for himself. I think even in the past, at different points, we've discussed him at great length. Avraham Avinu was the crown jewel of the creation. At least up until his time, possibly until today. I don't know where Moshe rates on this. But Avraham Avinu was so successful. Imamish, he broke all records before him. He smashed the whole measuring system. And he is for Hashem one thing. He asked from Hashem, he said, I don't want this to die with me. I want my efforts to be perpetual. I want to father what's going to become a nation that's eternally bonded with you. Avraham Avinu said, I gave you all that nachas. I fulfilled your purpose of creation after all those hundreds of years, all those centuries. This is what I want. I don't want schar. Hashem told Avraham, schar kahar b'me'oi. You have great reward coming to you. What's Avraham Avinu's response? Mind-boggling response. Hashem aleikim matiten li. Hashem, what can you possibly give me? What? Hashem promises a person, you have great reward, you should go wild from joy. Avraham's response is, what's it worth? V'anoichi aleicha ariri, I'm going childless. Avraham Avinu wanted what he achieved to become an eternal bond with Hashem.
What could it be from his thousands of talmidim that he...
What's that?
He had thousands. He started the Balshuva movement.
Oh,
why did he want to be a general?
You know what this exchange between Avraham and Hashem happened? If the light went bad, Avraham Avinu saw that the greatest of his disciples, the person who had put all his efforts into, didn't work. Avraham Avinu said, "If it's not my own progeny, it's not going to work." Okay, so whatever it is. What's that?
I was just thinking, we've discussed that before, I don't remember which year it was.
We've discussed, I'm probably sure we've discussed this. There's a lot of repetition. But that's why, that's really the missing piece of the puzzle. Hashem told Avram, okay. And therefore, Hashem now took it upon himself to breed from Avram Avinu's family the Am Hashem. And that's what's going on here. Continue with the efforts of Yitzchak, with the efforts of Yaakov. Once we had the 12 Shvatim, Hashem said, okay, I'm now going to take those people. We're changing the rules. That's right. I'm going to turn them into an Am Hashem. And it's also more than that. Avraham Avinu gained that godly element in such a solid way that it became perpetuated in his family. So it's true. This was a change in history. This is a sense of evolution. Here we go. We agree with them. So now, so yes, and yes, you want to see some of the fruits? We have Moshe and Aaron, Miriam. We have a Bitzala and Aliyah. We have all the different heads of the Shvatim, and we have the elders. Asher hoyu uyim l'nevuah masmedes. They reached a level where they were always in a state of being ready for prophecy. Kishah bin Nun v'kalev ben Yefune. The Chur. Right. These are the ones whose names are mentioned. This is Lassam Rabim, and there were plenty others. The Oz Hayuru Uim Lehiroi Sa'or Alehem. And then they reached the level that yes, it was already developing from a personal level to a national level. They now were going to become on a national scale the bearers of this great light. of this godly light. And they would now become the focus of Hashem's attention. Meaning, up till now in history, there's a big world. Hashem's busy with the whole world. But we see that Hashem's attention was always focused on the great individual who fulfilled the purpose of His creation. Right? After the whole description of the creation of the world, Hashem zeroes in on Avram, because Avram achieved that level. Since then, Hashem's whole focus, whole story of the Torah, is about Avram. Now, the nation, Klal Yisrael as a nation, are becoming the focus of Hashem for all of history. Okay, so here he's building up what the background of Klal Yisrael is, in order for us to just have the ability to start approaching the whole story of the eagle. That's all this, right, is the preamble to his explanation of what actually happened at the eagle. This, we'll let him finish building it up, and then we'll see.